Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dudes and Beer. I am Chris Jordan, your host. Tonight, we will be joined by Army veteran Cornelius Maxwell to talk about the pressing issues with veteran suicides in America, veterans' health issues in America. Before we welcome Cornelius to the show officially, please do not forget, Dudes and Beer is now brought to you by Audible. If you are a fan of reading like I am, but just don't have time to turn a page anymore, too much time in traffic, too much time traveling, check out Audible. Audibletrials.com/dudes will get you a 30-day free trial with Audible. You'll get a couple of free downloads there. There's all kinds of great stuff, all kinds of categories, everything from sci-fi to thrillers to just, nonfiction, fiction, all kinds of great stuff. Go by, check it out. Audibletrial.com/dudes to get your free 30-day trial. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be getting a little deep with an Army veteran who has taken it upon himself to begin a petition for a proposed bill to help change the transition of veterans back into society and help out with mental health. Welcome to the show, Cornelius Maxwell. How are you doing today?
I'm good. And yourself?
Doing fantastic. Doing fantastic. Let's get into a little bit real quick about your military background. What was it that brought you to the military? How long did you serve, in what capacity? Then we'll get into a little bit of what the transition was like for you, and why it is that you started getting involved in this capacity, Cornelius.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me. So I'd like to say thank you to the audience for listening to me as well. And I really do hope they get something out of this episode, in this podcast, and it's something that's informative and beneficial. Now, as far as your question, the reason why I joined the military is, first and foremost, my father served in the military. So he's a retired Army veteran himself. So then, I got to the point where I graduated high school a year early. I graduated high school in 3 years. And so I'm a 17-year-old who's out in the world, and I'm trying to find my niche as a man, you know, away from my, as my own niche. And so I began to struggle with finding a job and as well maintaining going to school, because at the time I was trying to attend college. And it was a struggle for me. And I always knew I wanted to enlist in the military. I just didn't know when. And so it got to the point to where I spent a couple years in college. And then I just decided to where, you know, I need to enlist. I need some extra assistance, and the military at the time provide opportunities for me that I seem to not find in the civilian world.
Sure.
So, you know, and like I said, that's what led to it. And did I have everyone's approval when I enlisted? I didn't. Did I have some people's approval? I did. So, you know, I heard the pros and the cons. But by the time I enlisted, I was already ready to go. You know, I went to my recruiter. I said, you don't have to sell me anything. All you got to do is just give me a job that I can utilize, probably when I get out in the civilian world. And within a month or so later, I was already headed for basic training after a month or so. So.
And what was it exactly, what was your job duty in the military? What was your active service for?
I was a communications sergeant. And so my main job was pretty much to set up the router networks and the AM, FM type radio network, things of that nature. And so that was my primary job.
Okay. Okay. And that can translate into the civilian world. Absolutely. You know, I mean, we had station engineers, things like that, that maintained all of our broadcast equipment, everything else at the stations that I worked at. So at what point did transition become an issue for you? Did you serve active duty overseas, like during wartime, or were you mainly based here in the States during your time of service?
Well, actually, I served 3 tours in Iraq. And so it was pretty much one of those situations where, you know, you deploy, come back, deploy again, come back, deploy again. So I actually was on my way home, or had came home for my third deployment before I hit my 6-year mark in service. And so I had just gotten so used to my, you know, deployment cycle. I spent most of my service overseas at that time period, because I spent 7 years for active duty, and then 1 year was in the reserves.
Wow, that's quite a bit of time to be out in the field, in active duty. What was the transition like for you, going from and being an active everyday soldier out in the field, to coming back to living a non-military civilian life?
Well, for me, I had a strong support system, you know, backing me. And so I can always rely, and I still can rely, on my supporters. So, and their family, friends, just, you know, people I've met along the way, and, you know, they've been huge supporters. And so that helped me in my transition. Now, it was a little rough, because the way that I carried myself was so used to soldiering. People were either felt threatened by me or intimidated by me, because when I would go places, I had become so used to, you know, looking inside of buildings and looking at people's, you know, postures. So I'm sizing them up all the time, which is second nature. I'm seeing how they move their hands. Are their hands in their pockets? You know, because, you know, I'm staring at people in their windows. I'm staring at their cars. And it becomes second nature, because it had been what I had been trained to do for almost 10 years, you know, 8 years, this is almost 10 years. I had trained my mind to look for these things in the combat zone, and I had did them actively in the combat zone. Mm. And so, you know, that became a struggle, just to readjust, not coming off so where people considered me as so aggressive. And so also part of my transition was the fact of communication differences. You know, I got used to, and this is what I tell people, is two words have such a misunderstanding, and those two words are too easy. When in the Army, if a sergeant tells me, hey, you know, Sergeant Maxwell, or hey, Maxwell, can you go do this for me? And I could say, hey, Sergeant, that's too easy. I can make that happen. You know, then, you know, they get excited and pat you on the back and say, that's right. Go ahead and make it happen, young soldier. Well, in the civilian world, you know, it was a different response. You know, there, some people would, you know, look at me funny, and, you know, they even say that, man, you're arrogant, you're cocky. And yeah, those two words, too easy, have a totally different meaning. And in the military, they mean that you were cocky. It meant that you were confident, you know? And so trying to readjust to the language portion, getting on that military lingo, was something I had to struggle with, because I feel like there is a transition process the military do use, but I think that there's a bottleneck in the transition process. And this is the reason why I sat down and I prayed about it. And the more I prayed, you know, I believe God revealed this concept to me, you know, as a revelation to help the veterans through my own personal struggles, but also through the struggles of my buddies and my brothers and sisters who I've also talked to and who are struggling and stuff like that. So, you know, it became a personal mission for me, and to help me, you know, my brothers and sisters at arms, because, I mean, no one goes and serves their country to come back to not be able to take advantage of the opportunities, you know, that's available here in this country. And this is what I'm proposing, is that, you know, these guys are presented with how to leverage these opportunities.
Yeah, and you know, you do have to even understand, like, it's much like going to college. You can go to college, you can get a degree, but that doesn't necessarily mean you know how to apply your degree or the teachings of your degree in the real world. And that transition in and of itself can be hard, much less whenever you start adding stress from a combat zone, anything like that to the equation. What were some of the unifying things that you saw as you started talking to other veterans, like you said, friends of yours that had served, other people? What were some of the, unifying characteristics that you saw that were issues for transition for people coming back from combat, coming back from a military life into the civilian world, aside from lingo, social cues, things like that?
Okay. Well, I talked to the veterans, and some of those things were trigger points. You know, we start referring to the PTSD, the post-traumatic stress disorders, and the TBIs, the traumatic brain injuries. You know, that alone, you know, those trigger points, you know, because one of my buddies who I served with in Iraq, he shared this petition, you know, that I have going on, and he was saying that we fought in a combat zone in an urban area. So the trigger points were more consistent because we fought in an urban area. And where do we live? Urban areas. You know, there's houses there, you know, and people are living their daily lives, you know, walking up and down the street. So the trigger points are more common, you know, they become more common because we, you know, the battle zone for us were in that area, was amongst everyday people. And so, I noticed that became an issue, and survivor's remorse. A lot of guys started having survivor's remorse when they seen that their buddies had died, and they said, well, what could I have done to do something different? And what if I caught this? And what if I was able to do that? And, I mean, at that time, that was split-second decisions, you know. So, but now that you're sitting back analyzing things, well, you didn't have the time to analyze as well, you know. So to help these guys on those lines, that became an issue. Then I talked to some guys who were homeless, and I noticed their homelessness became an issue with these guys struggling with jobs. I noticed that became an issue. And matter of fact, that was an issue of mine, was struggling with employment as well. Because I was sitting, and, you know, we have an enlisted side, we have a promotion process, and it's called a board process. And when you're going to the promotion board, you know, you're interviewing for your next, you know, your next job, your next rank. So your promotion, and you interview for every promotion. Well, on the enlisted side, you have to go in front of a panel for the guys, right? You sit there in the chair and they're quizzing you. You know, what regulation is this for your job? If you're in this situation, what do you do and how do you stay in the regulation? And so they're quizzing you. Now, they also want to make sure that you can remain professional under certain circumstances. So they can even crack jokes. And they'll sit there and laugh. But no matter how funny the joke is, if I'm at the promotion board seeking a promotion, it's not in my best interest to laugh. I'll have to still keep a straight face, no matter how funny the joke is. And so, because if I do laugh, then they can say, well, you know what? You're not professional. Please excuse yourself on the board and you don't get the promotion. Well, when you're going to a job interview, the circumstances are different. You want to, you know, have that relatability with the future employer or your future supervisor. So they want to be able to laugh at you, and they want to be able to see, not only do you know the job, but do you have that type of personality that blends in, you know? And so I remember sitting in a job interview at the position of attention because it became second nature for me. And I remember not laughing and stuff like that. And as I realized through my interviewing skills that, and from talking to people who were, you know, interviewers and recruiters, they were telling me that, you know, I need to be more impressionable and more relatable. And so I had to train myself to learn how to interview and make sure that I could laugh at jokes or even crack, you know, say funny things, but yet still be professional. And, you know, that was a struggle. And then also I looked at entrepreneurship, no matter what. Entrepreneurship is just a struggle regardless. And so it's a leap of faith that you're taking. And so I, as an entrepreneur, that's what I am now. And I started learning about programs through the SBA, about the veteran-owned businesses. And I started learning about all these different business tactics. And I even attended a executive MBA fellowship at UCLA that helps veterans become entrepreneurs. They teach us entrepreneurs, and you know, the professors there at UCLA, and they flew us out there. It has a 9-day residency, and they flew us out there. And we were in class from 7 in the morning till 9 at night learning about how to be an entrepreneur. And so, and then I also started talking about veterans who, you know, were struggling to get their benefits. And so I started to think about all these things, like, man, these guys serve their country and they're not even getting their benefits. And that becomes another issue, you know, because it's like, how do you live? If you're struggling getting a job, you're struggling learning how to acclimate to the market that you're a part of now, you know, because like I said, as entrepreneurs, I'm saying the entrepreneur route because before you enter into a business market, you have to know your audience, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's the same thing when you're going into the civilian market now. They need to know what they're getting to. They need to know the audience. They need to know the people they're interacting with. And I believe that we can invest more time into doing so for the soldiers because it's a volunteer army. It's a volunteer Navy. It's a volunteer Marines. It's a volunteer Air Force. And it's a volunteer Coast Guard. You know, it's not mandatory. So I believe that because one decides to volunteer, life and the eyesight, I believe that we should exercise the opportunity to invest in these guys' transition so they can be successful in this, you know, in the civilian world, because we're willing to make sacrifices. And that's what it takes to succeed, is willing to take sacrifices.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and not just that, these are people that we have already invested the money in training.
Correct.
Why would we not want to help them transition into the civilian marketplace? Why would we not want to help them transition into infrastructure jobs, in technology, you know, doing networking, things like that? Maintaining Correct. Communications, maintaining civil engineering projects like our bridges mm-hmm. and roadways whenever, you know, Army engineers get out, things mm-hmm. like that. I don't understand the mentality because we've already paid for the training.
Correct.
Like,
and it's cost from taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, like you basically right. after 4 years, you've basically just flushed that training money right down the toilet. And
exactly.
at the same time, flush somebody's mentality and almost their self-worth mm-hmm. right down the toilet. Because they've come to identify themselves as that. Mm-hmm. And when they get out and they can't do what they identify themselves as, that's when it starts getting really hard. It's one thing to come back with PTSD, things like that from a war zone, and you know at least be able to give back in some way. To be able to come back and have no means of support is one of the most frightening prospects I can think of. And one of the most horrible things that we could ever do to the people that chose to sacrifice life for our rights, for what we believe as a country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just strange to me. That's just strange to me. I don't understand the concept. I don't get the mentality that does that. And mm-hmm. in the last few days since we spoke, Cornelius, I've taken some time to look up some statistics on things. And one of them was the rate of homelessness amongst veterans in America, folks. And this is a staggering number. The last real report that was done and put out was in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we were looking at over 40,000 homeless veterans in the United States.
Correct.
And these are people that came back and like you're saying, we're having trouble finding jobs. having trouble transitioning careers, having trouble transitioning into civilian life. With that in mind, Cornelius, tell us a little bit about the petition that you have put forth. You've put a lot of work into this, and it's available on change.org, folks. It will be in the episode post. We'll have links to it all over the place. It'll be under our causes page as well, on the Dudes and Beer website, dudesandbeer.com. But if you go to change.org and look for transition process for military veterans, or even probably transition units would probably do it, and it'll take you right to the page. But go ahead and tell us a little bit about your petition here on change.org and what you're trying to do for your fellow veterans that are that are back now and those that are presently coming back, Cornelius.
Okay, great. Well, with this concept, I presented it on March 25th, 2019 at the Arizona House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. And in this presentation, I presented it as requesting for a bill. And in doing so, the concept behind the transition units theory is based upon, we're taking these guys, like, you know, when soldiers and sailors and airmen, Marines, and when we first enter the service, we're isolated from the civilian world to learn how to become service members. And so we learn, you know, the ethics and the code and what it takes to succeed in this profession. And so now what I'm proposing here is the reverse to that. I'm proposing that we take these guys off the military units so that way they're not held accountable for military duty for their last 3 to 6 months that's on their military contract. And so that way these guys can solely focus on, you know, their transition process. So if these guys have PTSD issues, these guys have 3 to 6 months to start saying, hey, I will admit to this. You know, because currently at the moment, there's a process where if you have mental health issues, well, you tend to be penalized. It's called a flag. And that flag identifies you as having been unable to be promoted. The flag also helps you from getting types of perks and benefits at the moment. So with that being stated, and some people can even change your discharge depending on the flag.
Yes, it can.
Mm-hmm. And so what I'm proposing, because these guys are, and now if you're in the military unit and your unit has orders to deploy and you have a mental health issue, then the flag makes sense. You know, it also lets them know that, hey, you know, don't give this guy a weapon because he needs to work through some psychological things. And so with that portion of it, well, we want to make sure that, you know, those guys are going to come back, that they don't hurt themselves or somebody else. But, you know, yeah, that's why I propose it this way in the transition unit theory, is that these guys who are no longer going into combat zones, these guys are going to the civilian world. So let's not penalize these guys. Let's put these guys where they can learn, to where they can go and talk to the people they need to, so they can learn their trigger points before they get out the service. You know, instead of learning their trigger points after they get out, and it's like, well, what do I know? I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't know who to talk to.
Yeah,
then it's too late.
At that point, it's already too late. Exactly. And especially, perfect. You know, something that we've covered before is the issues in police departments around the country. And whenever you actually look at the statistics for the number of veterans that go into public service as a police officer or an officer of the law, there's a large rate of that.
Correct.
A great number of veterans go into service as public safety officers. So if they aren't getting that transition, and you know, it can lead to a lot of issues.
Yes. And like I said, we want to prevent those things, you know, and that's why this is a proactive approach. Because now we can, with the transition in this series, we can identify these guys. And of course, they tend to, because, you know, if you say, hey, fill out this paperwork, with, I know I'm going to be punished for it. You know, that tells people, you know, let's be honest, people are going to be dishonest because they don't want the punishment.
Yeah.
And so, let's eliminate the punishment completely and tell these guys to be completely honest with amnesty. And with that, now you have more cases, more, you know, people being forthcoming, outright, and now we can hit the root of the problem, you know, as a solution, because now we have more people willing to come out and say, you know what, I'm here having these issues. I was in the combat zone. I experienced this, and I don't know. I need help. I may need some help, you know. So, but I've been thinking this way, and I've been, you know, taught this and that, and been exposed to certain information, and I think that this might apply to me. So that helps them on that level to get seeking help prior to, you know. That also goes for, like I said, the mental health aspect, but let's also look at the employment aspect, right? Let's say, like in my case, I was a communication sergeant. We're working in networks and routers. You want to get those certifications, such as like your A+, you know, like the A+, which helps you, you know, do computer hardware and stuff like that. Well, within 3 to 6 months, if I have this experience working with these routers, and I may have not had the time in service to, you know, get these certifications and do the training. Well, 3 to 6 months is all it takes to, in some cases, depending on how you maneuver, you can get these certifications, you can study for it and take the test and have the certification. And so, you know, and the perfect example is a CCNA. It's a computer networker. Well, if I'm in the service, I'm making $40,000 a year working these routers. Well, if I take the last 3 to 6 months of my contract and focus on getting that CCNA, well, that CCNA walks a person into, by having that certification, they usually walk into jobs making $100,000 a year.
That's right.
So, you know, and that's beneficial, you know. And then also we can work on ways on utilizing these skills, leveraging those skills. Like, for example, there's a certification I earned. It's called a combat lifesaver certification. And in doing so, it was equivalency in training is similar to an EMT. You know, we're able to treat burn victims. We're able to treat gunshot wounds. You know, we can put an IV in an individual. We know how to, you know, put, you know, work the veins and stuff like that to treat these guys, you know, and to keep them alive long enough to where we can get them to the doctor. And but that combat lifesaver certification doesn't transfer over into the civilian world. And so I would like to have some sort of system that creates that certification to transfer over into the civilian world. Because now that's creating jobs and utilizing those skills and leveraging those skills, you know. And because a certain number of people in the unit have to have that certification when you're going into a combat zone. They have to know how to treat these things, you know. And it makes sense. It's important. So why not be able to treat them or utilize those skills in helping people in the civilian world?
Yeah.
Firefighters, you know, they get burned. What if you have a guy who's been in the combat zone and say, you know, you'd be burning the fire and help treat that for you, you know? Or, you know, people get shot in the street. You know, you have a guy who's serving combat who has this, like, you know, has this training, can utilize that training as an EMT even, you know, or where it can transfer over. And so now, you know, so now you're still saving lives and still into service, but from a different capacity. And so that's right there. This is how I'm going to attack the unemployment, you know, and I also want to attack the homelessness issue, you know, because a lot of times these guys are just unprepared. They're not prepared for this market. Because again, a lot of these guys, and I showed in my presentation at the Arizona Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, that the largest portion of people who serve in the country, not the guys who retire, and they serve 20 years and retire, they do less than 20 years.
Yeah.
And these guys enlist. When you enlist, most people who enlist do not have a college degree. They have a high school diploma. And the DOD in their 2017 demographics report, you know, the Department of Defense, they did a case study with over 1 million people. And in this case study, they showed that 80% of them of that million had a high school diploma, and that's it. I mean, these guys enlisted 17, 18, 19, and in their early 20s. This is all they know as far as adults.
Yeah,
this is how they know that.
If you've got a college degree or even a great number of credits toward a degree, you're normally going straight into NCO school, you know, like you're going in as a non-commissioned officer, folks. You aren't going in as like a buck private or something like that. So,
well, it depends. It also depends on the program you take, because you know, if you have your college, you know, your college credits, you can go through the ROTC program.
Yep.
And you know, and like I believe West Point as well, so you can come in as an officer with leadership in a leadership role.
Yeah.
You know, but if you take the enlisted side, you know, you still come in even with a degree. You may not come in as a young private. You may come in as a specialist, you know, which is one rank below sergeant, if you already have a bachelor's degree. But, you know, the thing about it, if you have a case study of a million people and 80% of them only have a high school diploma, that's almost, that's 800,000.
Yeah, exactly.
800,000.
That's the point I was trying to make, was that the non-commissioned officers and officers make up the minority of the military. They are not the vast majority of the body of the military. So when you're talking about people who only have a high school diploma, you know, you then even have to look at critical decision making skills before they went into the military and experienced PTSD. And at that point, you're looking very much almost at the same way that addiction affects the brain, where once somebody stops drinking for like 15 years, you know, like if they've been drinking for 15 years and then they stop a horrible life of alcoholism, they emotionally revert to where they were when they started drinking, because that's where they stop. That's where the brakes got halted. So it's very much the same thing. These guys are like hopped into an emotional time machine, going back to a point before that PTSD happened and still trying to process PTSD. And it's a horrible situation. It leads to, like you say in your petition here, the enemy named veteran suicide rates, PTSD, homelessness, unemployment, and lack of veterans acquiring earned benefits as some of our enemies that are defeating our nation. And it's absolutely true. When you look at suicide rates, some of the suicide data that's out there right now, it's the numbers that were done last year showed about 20 veterans a day committing suicide. And granted, folks, whenever we're saying veterans here, that means all veterans. That means active veterans, non-active veterans. Veterans, anybody that is in the military or has been in the military. So these folks, these numbers include active people in the military as well. And that's almost one an hour. It's like one every 65 minutes. That is mind-numbing. It's mind-numbing. And to think about that, to start breaking that down and start thinking about what are we doing for them? How easy, like you were saying, most people who are active duty are not going to seek that treatment for PTSD because it's going to remove them from the chance of promotion while they're in the, it's not going to remove them from their active duty. It's not going to like cut their tour short. All it's going to do is make it to where they can't carry a weapon during their tour, you know, which means like they feel like they're dead weight to their buddies. And you know, How easy is it for people to get the help they need when they get back? We know it can be hard to get the help that they need while they're in the field, everything else. But how hard can it be to get that while they're once people get back?
So, like I said, because of the flag process, and like I said, the system. With that portion, it makes sense, you know. Like I said, because if the unit's getting ready to deploy, they want to make sure that they have the safety of the unit. So if we take these guys out of the unit and put these guys in these transition units, now these guys can dress in civilian clothing. They can start addressing people by their first name, then they can start growing their lifestyles, hairstyle, and stuff like that. And so now they're not being held accountable as soldiers. So now as they're going into the civilian world, they're learning to carry themselves. They're learning the lingo and the conversations and that will take place. And they're learning the culture. And so as they're learning the culture, they're still receiving a paycheck from the military. And at the same time, these guys, so now, you know, as they're learning, they're still maintaining the same pay. So they're still maintaining the same, the ability to pay their bills while they're doing this. And so that's the thing, that's what's very beneficial, because you don't know what's wrong when you don't know, you know, and that's the thing about it, is uncertainty. And the thing about the military is, well, you have guys who are in service making policy for you for when you get out. But you have to remember, these guys are still in service. And so they themselves have not or haven't encountered what's next. And I believe that because I have encountered what's next and I've been out for a while, then I can foresee these things, because I've walked this path and still walking this path. And I'm seeing, you know, a lot of my buddies, my battle buddies, go through this path. And so if you haven't left the military, it's hard to say what's next, because the future for you is uncertain as well. And so we want to make sure that these guys get their stack of help. It's very beneficial on so many levels, not just the soldier themselves, but also for the family. You know, because when one family member serves, a whole family member, the whole family serves in some form, you know, some way, shape, or form. And I can tell you that because my father served. So I remember when he had to go to Korea for a year, and my mother had four children to include me. And my older brother, he has a severe autism. So he doesn't speak, and he walks a lot, and he doesn't sense danger. And so a lot of times he'll just take off running, and he'll just run. And he loved to run to the store. Well, he would run in the street without any awareness or knowledge of cars and the danger of being hit by a car, you know? And so imagine that stress on my mother, trying to watch four children and one who needed the extra attention. And so, you know, and so, because say you have children with special needs who, you know, the service members also have children with special needs, and you're leaving them behind as well when you go to serve. And so the whole family feels that, because that presence isn't there anymore, you know, where, you know, on a daily basis, we got used to seeing our father being there, but that year when he was in Korea, we didn't see him. So we didn't have that presence there as well. So the whole family starts, and it affects the entire family. So when you look at the suicide rates of 20 people a day or 22 people a day, veterans committing suicide, imagine that on the family side. You know, everybody has a mother and a father. Naturally, that's how we're born. You know, biologically, we have a mother and a father. Yeah. You know, so those numbers jump up to over 24,000 people affected just on those numbers. So, well, you know, you see that doesn't include the friends. That doesn't include if they have children. That doesn't include if they have a spouse or a lover. You know, now we look at those, how many of the people affected. Now it's exponential. So, you know, the numbers are, you know, exponential to the people who are affected by these. So, you know, that's why I say it's very beneficial, because look at how many people are being hurt by this. And to take the call of duty, believe that only 1% of our nation's population don a uniform. 1%. And I believe the total of the entire population is 3% that has ever donned a uniform. 3% of the whole population has ever put on a uniform, yes, to serve this country in a military capacity. So, I mean, that's a small percentage. It's a very small percentage. So, you know, and I want to make sure these guys get that help, because it is a tough battle with that. You know, the PTSD is no joke. It's a tough battle. And I sit on the board of a nonprofit right now. It's called the Honor House. And the, you know, the founder of the Honor House, they come to find out that, well, he was blown up in IED blast, I believe, in Afghanistan. And 60 Minutes did a story on him. His name is Brian Mancini. And after his death, they said, you know, while he was living, they said he started going to psychosis, because after his death, they found that parts of his brain had been burned from an IED blast.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, if you're, you know, the tissue in your brain is burned, that's going to affect your psychology, your psyche, you know, your ability to process information. And your brain is the process center, you know. So how many more cases? We have people that are living today with burned tissue matter in their brain. So their brain is burned, you know, and it's a physical burn. You know, that doesn't include the emotional burn. So, you know, and that's, we, you know, as we're starting to learn more and get more involved, you know, it's just like, man, you know, when you hear that type of information, it's like, man, what can I do to do more? So.
Yeah, and, you know, I know so many vets that have had the issues like what you're talking about, traumatic brain injury, things like that. Mm-hmm. And for them, the transition is even harder. Like you're saying, mm-hmm. It's so often such a late diagnosis. It's not a diagnosis that can be made in the field. And your petition is fantastic. Once again, everybody, if you go to change.org and look up transition units, and you will see Cornelius Maxwell. You'll see the petition started by Cornelius Maxwell. Please do sign the petition, folks. Help these veterans get the help that they need. Help them transition into the world that they have helped defend with their life in so many cases. Now,
yes.
I'm going to throw out some information here that is pretty hardcore. If you go to mentalhealth.va.gov, there is a whole list of 1-800 numbers here, folks. Not only for veterans, but people who know veterans, because so often veterans are so proud that they do not seek the help. It's a point of pride that they can't care for themselves or can't get something done that used to be so easy for them. And so there is a national call center for homeless veterans. If you are or know a veteran who is homeless or at risk of becoming homeless, you can contact them. You can also chat with them online here on this page, but you can call 1-877-422-3838. That is 24/7. You can also call the Veterans Crisis Line, connects veterans and service members in crisis and their families and friends with qualified, caring VA responders through a confidential toll-free hotline. That is 1-800-273-8255, as well as the War Vet Call Center, which is 1-877-WAR-VETS. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on to share your story, Cornelius, to share your mission. We will definitely add this petition for transition units to our causes page on the Dudes and Beer website. We'll absolutely put the links to it in the episode post and all that. Any final messages before we let you go for this episode, Cornelius?
Yes, I'll just say thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it. I believe it's an honor and a privilege to be on your show with Dudes and Beer.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. And as well, thank you to your audience for listening to me, and I hope that they are inspired and I hope they learn something from listening to this episode.
Most definitely.
As you know, I said that's the goal, is to be able to help, and we help by educating. And I believe, you know, that this podcast has been very educational. You know, and as well, like I said, we want you guys to keep up with me as well. I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr, and LinkedIn.
Tell them where they can find you. What are your handles for all that, Cornelius?
Okay, on Twitter, it is Cornelius J. It's Cornelius J. Max, M-A-X-W, 1 on Twitter. On dump on either Facebook. You can find me as Mr. Cornelius J. Maxwell, or just Cornelius J. Maxwell in the search. You can also find me on Twitter. It's Cornelius J. Period Maxwell, all one word, all lowercase letters. And so, you know, I'm posting constantly about the transition units theory. I'm sharing this information and things like that. So, and as well as, don't forget the petition. The petition is very important. And the petition itself is on change.org. And you can find it there. You can either type in my name and find it, Cornelius J. Maxwell, or you can type in improve the transition units process for veterans by creating transition units. And you can find it there as well, there on change.org. And you can also go to the Arizona State Capitol website, and you can find the presentation that I gave as well. And that's on March 25th. So you go into their archives, to their house, you can find the actual presentation that I gave there. Or you can send me a message on one of these links, and I'll send it to you as well. So that way you can get the full presentation that I
actually
did. Because this,
send me a link, and I'll make sure to embed it in the post. That way everybody can see your full presentation.
Sounds good. Great. Definitely, I will definitely send that to you.
Yeah.
And so that way, you know, everyone can have this information. Just throw it out there and just help the veterans, you know, in every avenue that we can. And then also I'm looking at working with businesses and nonprofits and looking for endorsement letters with the signatures, because I want to be, because right now this bill is in the process of being introduced at the Arizona House in January of 2020 at the next session. And so I'm trying to build as much support as possible by January 2020, because we want to get yays all across the board. So definitely, and because I said in the end, the causes, we want to decrease the veteran suicide rate. We want to decrease the homelessness rates. We want to decrease the unemployment rates. And we want to increase veteran entrepreneurship. And we want to increase veterans acquiring the benefits that they truly have deserved and have earned. So thank you. And thank you to your audience. And thank you for everyone for listening. And I truly appreciate your time.
Absolutely, and this will not be your last visit, I assure you. We love nothing more than updates whenever it comes to things like this. So as the petition grows, as things grow, we definitely want to talk with you and get updates with the ongoing efforts with the transition units theory, Cornelius.
Yes, great. Thank you. And I look forward to coming back. Like I said, I've had an awesome time on this show, and I believe that we would have more awesome experiences together.
Fantastic. We greatly look forward to it. Please do hold the line. While you're online checking out everything that Cornelius was just talking about, please do make sure to go on by and check out dudesandbeer.com. That's where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find the knowledge vault with all the great stuff, like the patents of Nikola Tesla, as well as scientific studies, everything else. If you're looking for things like CBD, stuff like that, make sure to stop on by diamondcbd.com and use the code DUDES420 to save 30%
to our audio
on your
card. Streams or chat
until
with
next time,
live,
take care of yourselves, take care of
Dudes
each other.
App,
can't be good.
And
be good at it.
Available on
bye-bye.
Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.